Welcome to Community in Code, the podcast where we talk to the human beings behind the commits. I am here today with Dee Teal. She is a project manager. She has been in the WordPress ecosystem for a long time, but not now. And you are one of the mentors involved in WP Includes, which we can talk about. I'll let you introduce yourself more fully, but welcome to the show, Dee.
Thank you, Chris. It's lovely to be here. Yeah. Hi, folks. I'm Dee. I am coming at you live from, well, not live probably, from Melbourne, Australia. I'm a New Zealander who's now lived in Australia almost longer than they ever lived in New Zealand. And yeah, I love the WordPress community. As Chris said, I'm no longer actually actively working in it, though, to be fair, I've just landed a client that has WordPress. But I have stayed very close to it, largely because most of my friends are still there. So, and you never know, maybe one day I'll be back. So I'm keeping close just to make sure.
So I think the question that everyone is definitely dying to hear the answer to is, what is the difference between a New Zealander and an Australian?
Oh man, that is a fraught question.
This, I know, you might as well and that's ask, why I brought it here.
You might as well ask, what's the difference between a Canadian and American?
Ooh, yeah, okay. I mean, there's things I could name for sure, like, you know, socialized healthcare for one. And
well, we both, New Zealand and Australia, both have that in our favor. So there are some stark differences, perhaps, between Australia, because I would put us, I as a New Zealander would probably say that the analogy would be, I would liken Australia more to America in that scenario, not because Australia is like America, but in terms of the personality, maybe. I'm going to get so much clap for saying these
things. I'm sure there are no Australians that listen to this show. I'm really
and I guess it's similar to the relationship you see, that kind of big brother, or not even big brother, but that sibling type rivalry. I mean, New Zealand is a rugby union loving nation. The kind of everybody in New Zealand lives and breathes what goes on in the rugby and very little else. And I think our attitude is that we will support New Zealand above all, and then any other country playing Australia, you know. So so that's kind of a little bit indicative of how people feel.
So we know each other from a long time ago when we both worked at HumanMade, which is a WordPress agency, and we worked together a lot in that context. I have always really enjoyed the few opportunities that we have had to see each other in person, because it's quite a distance between where you live and where I live and where things are often sort of organized and people gather. Yeah. But there have been a few occasions. Most recently, though, we were both in Ottawa for WordCamp Canada.
That's true.
Talk about the talk that you gave at WordCamp Canada.
So I am very, very interested in the dynamics and relationships about people working together. I'm going to struggle, actually. I should have actually pulled it up, because I'm going to struggle to remember the title. It's kind of a convoluted title, but I was talking about the algorithms that humans bring to the workplace. Less so than the algorithms that we
cultural algorithms.
Cultural algorithms. Yeah, the hidden innovation multiplier, I think, was what the rest of that
something very rest pretentious of that title was.
Well, it is really pretentious, and it was sneaky, because I read the brief from the organizers to say this is what we wanted to talk about, and I couldn't see because innovation was. A primary driver, right, of the conversations that they were wanting to have. And so this was a carefully crafted title to cut through the selection process, and it worked. And so, nice. But the whole theme of it was that sense of, particularly in this world that we work in, that is much more remote, much more virtual environments, that gives you access to a much greater diversity of cultural experience and cultural algorithms that people bring to the workplace. And so it was kind of a bit of a research examination to explore what that actually looked like and what that actually might mean on the face of people actually working together. Because it's really interesting to me to go, well, I've got people who, I'm in Australia, Asia Pacific. And so we have people working from between Australia and New Zealand, which is a result of colonialism and so a dominant white culture by and large. And then other countries working alongside us are working that we have access to that, you know, there's a lot of workplaces that are having to navigate, okay, what does that look like when we've got all of these different cultures working together?
Yeah, and maybe I warmed up that particular subject a little bit more accidentally than I had intended to by even just talking about the difference of New Zealand and Australia and the difference between Canada and the US, because I definitely remember I wouldn't say it's necessarily culture shock, but there's definitely a cultural adjustment that I went through transitioning from working at a US-based agency, Web Dev Studios. WordPress agency does a lot of big, you know, enterprise-level clients. And mm-hmm. then working at HumanMade, which was largely European-based, but also just remote first, much more remote first, with people from like all across all the time zones of the world.
Right.
And there is an adjustment in expectations. There's an adjustment in, and not like expectations in terms of like the work itself, but like the things that you expect from a conversation, the things you expect from an employer or an employer-employee relationship.
The things that are expected of you as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I thought that, like, and one of the things that I appreciated too about, particularly as you brought that talk to WordCamp Canada, was you actually did research on some of the Canadian sort of cultures and things that different cultures within Canada might bring to the table as well.
Yeah. So when I was exploring, I mean, cultural algorithms is kind of a phrase that got coined through the process of me organizing this. It's not something that you generally, I think, would go searching and looking for and find a whole lot of research on. So a lot of the research and stuff that I was looking at was what are the kind of underlying things that happen in different cultures. And the two that I really spoke to was a Dutch one, and then one, because I was up in, you know, northeast Canada, mm-hmm. there's an indigenous people's group there that has published a lot of information about how they do things, and they talked about the seven generations mm-hmm. Approach to how they plan and do things, and what that is, of course, when when you hear it talked about like that, is thinking that far ahead. What is the impact of what I'm going to do going to be on not just the generation behind me, but all of those to follow, and planning accordingly? And if somebody is in your workplace and that is the attitude that they have, you're going to see their output be slower. You're going to see them be a lot more considered in the course of a conversation. And so it's important to me, we have this expectation. Here's this company. We have an underlying culture about how we work, and a lot of that will be driven by our company values and the direction that we're going, and by the culture of the leaders that we have in this group. And kind of bringing people into that, we have this expectation that people will adjust themselves to fit the culture that mm-hmm. is, and that is a natural expectation, I think, and certainly that does happen. Certainly know that for me, the culture at HumanMade has wildly affected my expectations of culture in other places, just because it was such a transformative workplace for me. So, but, you know, when you're looking and expecting people to kind of, I heard somebody talking about the melting pot, you expect everybody to come in and adjust themselves and fit themselves to what you're in, you lose some of the richness and some of the opportunities for innovation that having some different perspectives and different approaches might actually bring. And so some of the things that I talked about was, when you explore, here are some ways to recognize or examine kind of the different cultures that are in your workplace. Here are some of the ways that might be useful to leverage.
I remember the melting, like, asking the question or making me making the observation during your talk or during the at the end of the Q&A section, because growing up in the United States, it's almost part of the, I think, academic curriculum to conceptualize the United States as a melting pot where we have lots of people coming from different cultures and whatever, and we make the thing that is America. We make this project, right, together. And one of the insights that I got from your talk was just the idea that, or the suggestion that maybe not that. maybe we don't melt all of those things in a pot. Maybe we celebrate those differences and those voices because they bring new things to the table.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't remember if this was something somebody said in the context of that talk or in the Q&A that we were talking about, but I was thinking that melting pot thing really, really struck me. And I was kind of, my thing is, what if it was more like a tapestry where you've got all these different things that are weaving in together? And I kind of remember if somebody said that. I think somebody might have said it, something like that. But that sense of we all bring something. Mm-hmm. We all recognize that what everybody brings is valuable, and that the picture that we make with everything is much more compelling than if we just smoke. I mean, you remember when you were playing with Play-Doh as a kid, right? Mm-hmm. You've got all these different colors and you put all these things together. And the more that you mix them together, the more ugly it gets. It's that yucky brown.
Just a weird brown, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, but when there is that separation, but they are all part of something that's a whole, a sculpture or whatever it is that you're making, it's so much more dynamic and interesting and bright and valuable than, because everybody still has those pieces that are uniquely them. It hasn't just become this homogenous lump of, which is a, you know, I mean, it's an interesting thing to talk about in the current dynamic, right?
Right.
Certainly when you're all of the things that we see outside of America and what's going on there, it's, you know, maybe politically dicey to talk about, but that sense of that homogenous, or, you know, this other culture, the white culture, is so much more prime than we're losing that sense of the melting pot. It's like, oh no, we absolutely can't possibly, and so that we need to separate rather than and then bring together. And it's heartbreaking to watch.
And now I'm visualizing this idea, this concept of the United States as a melting pot, as a ugly lump of brown clay.
I'm so sorry. It wasn't my intention at all.
No, I mean it's because I like, it's just, it's interesting to think about in those different terms. And even like you don't even have to like look at like this idea from like such a sort of broad, high level like perspective, because it's most of the time it's the little things, it's the little interactions that are just things that you don't necessarily expect, or communication patterns that are different between people. And when you are operating at a much more global level, like I think you and I both were at Human Made, then it brings these things into the focus more, and you need to learn how to communicate in a way that is a little bit different. Is that where you sort of started getting this interest in this kind of idea, is through our work together there?
Yeah, it was. Sorry, I've got a cat here who's I'm trying desperately to make sure she doesn't stand on the things that will turn off the computer. Just sit on your bed and be cool. Yeah, it was the event that we were at, the meetup that we were at, where we did the cultural, it wasn't cultural sensitivity training, it was implicit bias training.
Yeah, that was in Sri Lanka.
And I was wildly confronted with my own racial bias. Now, I grew up in New Zealand. We are multicultural, mostly with you know, New Zealand, we call it the Maori word in New Zealand is Pākehā, so the white people are the Pākehā. So I am Pākehā. And As people will know, the Indigenous culture in New Zealand, or the Indigenous people in New Zealand, are the Māori, and then but there are also a lot of Pacifica people, so people from Samoa, the Cook Islands, Rarotonga, or all of these other places, and there is a lot of work being done. They are by no means perfect, but there has been a lot of work done there. But what I hadn't realised is, you know, I have a boomer dad still with us, love him dearly, has some what we would consider now very old-fashioned attitudes. And I recognised while we were in those sessions in Sri Lanka was that I was racist, that my underlying attitudes and that my underlying biases were very much, my bias was against mm-hmm. people from India or people from the islands, or the brown people were. And I was horrified because that was not what I wanted to think intellectually, but this had been sown so deep in me. And so having to learn and recognize that and then do the work around confronting that. And we all have biases. We all have. And so there's interesting places that you can go if you're interested to go, well, what are my biases? You know, I grew up deeply religious Christianity, so then of course you come with some biases there mm-hmm. around the queer community, and so I think in my mid to late 40s and now here in my 50s, it's like there's just been this radical transformation kind of inside my head and heart about the value of people. And I think that some of that passion that I have for, you know, DEI initiatives and for, you know, this kind of work and going, well, let's just examine that a little bit more mm-hmm. and trying to show people the value of what other people and cultures bring. And let's just not always assume that because we have these attitudes in our head that our attitudes are right. And then so I talk like what I delivered in Ottawa, and then I've done, others as well along some of these lines, is all geared towards, I just want to open people's eyes and go, hang on just a second, confront the own log that's in your own eye, and then you start to be able to see stuff in other people. You go, oh, and then be able to say, oh, well, that you bring that to us, you bring that into our workplace. Let's celebrate that. Mm-hmm. And when people are seen and recognized, not just because of how they fit into this square, you know, or how they fit into your environment or how they fit into your culture, but understand that in your culture you recognize and celebrate and value theirs, you know, engagement goes off the chart because mm-hmm. people are just like, oh, I'm seen and I'm valued for me, mm-hmm. not just because of what I can do.
Yeah, that particular implicit bias workshop that we shared together, like I also have very distinct memories of that in particular. The thing that I took away from that the most that I didn't expect, because there are things like going into it that like I'm a white male cis presenting individual living in the western part of the United States. Like I mm-hmm. understand my privilege and I understand how I grew up and where I grew up and the relationship. And so I expect certain things about how I was raised and what my culture was growing up and my experiences and whatever. And so there's certain things that I expect to find from something like that.
Right.
What I did not expect to find in myself was that I was so deeply, and honestly still am, deeply biased against gun owners and gun ownership.
Oh wow. Yeah,
like it's like there's something, I don't know, deep inside me that just like, it's like I have an immediate picture in my head, and I immediately have an impression that I have over people and an expectation. And then like a friend of mine, a fellow developer, someone who I had known for, you know, a couple years, says like, well, I own a gun. And like,
and how confronting is that? You go, so all of the noise in your head about what these people are like, and you're like, but I know you.
Right. And you're not bad.
I know, right? I mean, I come from a country where we have serious gun control. And again, I don't want to turn this into a political discussion about that. Right. But I got confronted with a very, very similar experience beautiful people that I was staying with. And I still have this picture of him walking up the stairs with his handgun in his hand. And I'm like, I had no idea. But because I would just come from a place where you would never expect that. But yes, I completely understand and, you know, that, that and resonate with that sense of, oh, I have these expectations about what a person is going to be like based on insert your bias here. And that's it's confronting to actually have those realize, oh, hang on just a second. That is not a true picture of what people are really like. Yeah. I think I had some interesting conversations because I did that talk and I flew from there back to Vancouver and I was hanging out with friends, again, former human-made colleagues, actually, who are from India. And I was spending some time with them and I was kind of unpacking the talk and what I'd come away from. I also heard Jill Binder's talk, which was also really, really touched on this as well.
Yep.
And I came away going, oh, Jill's was really impactful for me. And I was critiquing my own work against what Jill had delivered. Not necessarily negatively, but it was like, okay, so I would change this and I would go, you know, so I was kind of critiquing myself. But I sat down with these friends and I was talking to them and I said, can we have some real discussions about this? Because now I have an opportunity. And they were open to talking about their experience. And it was funny actually, because we talked about that event and that bias training that we did. And I said, how was that experience from you? And they like, we didn't learn anything because this is the stuff that they see all the time. But it was interesting for them to see the white people in the room go, ah, and actually start to get a sense. Because I know that they had challenges even in this, you know, beautifully accepting workplace of that we were in. But again, actually watching everybody start to come to grips with that. Like, I cannot recommend companies, and if there's one thing anybody takes away from this conversation, I cannot recommend highly enough putting your teams through implicit bias training like this.
Yeah.
Because that sense of, and I know empathy is a word that's getting a bad rap at the moment, but that sense of having an empathetic workforce that goes, oh, somebody might be seeing something different in this experience or this problem than I am, maybe they're what they bring to it might actually be helpful rather than me expecting them to shift to solve the problem the same way as me. Like that was one of the things that came away was how do people solve problems differently? I think one of the other algorithm, you know, in inverted commas, the cultural algorithm that I talked about was this Dutch one where it talks about the dikes and I've even forgotten the word, the way that they structure the landscape to make sure that the water stays out, right, because it's such low-lying land. And in order to do that, teams, towns and villages and local people had to work together to do it, even if they would normally be feudal. And so this whole sense of consensus building is something that lives very, very deeply in them. So the people building, you know, who working within a team to build consensus versus an autocratic group that will be like, well, the boss says this is the way we go. Here's where we go. Like, oh, there's so much richness in all of the things that people bring to the work and being able to see that and have your team be able to see that and be able to leverage that. It's just it's so powerful.
Yeah.
I just want everybody to do it. I want my workplace to do it.
I mean, I agree, and I think that it's important too because there's so much. There's also like data about like how diverse teams are just more productive. But to your point at the top of the episode, where like there's so much pressure to conform to those groups, it's like unless you are intentionally allowing for and respecting these diverse voices that maybe you are making hiring intentionally for those
100%
diverse perspectives, if you are then expecting them to just conform to the rest of the company culture or whatever into this melting pot, then you're not really going to get the benefit, the full benefit of having these disparate voices.
Yeah. Well, it's hiring for skill. Is it people like, or can they do the skills? And hiring for cultural fit. What is, you know, and there are a lot of
cultural
you can
fit
read.
Generally just means you're hiring to be a homogenous.
Exactly that. Yeah. Exactly that. I mean, it's, I think I understand there's an efficiency or a perceived efficiency of, well, if we've got people, we know we can just drop them right in. They're going to be able to do the work immediately. They're going to be able to, you know, just kind of fit in and go with the flow. There's an efficiency to that, right? They just hit the ground running. We can get more output more quickly. But it's like, what are you losing? What if there was just that little bit more time to actually be able to evaluate people, and what are they going to add? What are some of our other problems? You know, what, just having that kind of bigger picture. But we live in a culture, generally, in this kind of work culture where we need to be efficient. We need to be able to, you know, there's this constant pressure to save on time, be more billable, all those kinds of things. And so efficiency, I think, is what probably drives a lot of that.
Yeah. Switching gears a little bit, you're also involved in WP Includes. For anyone who doesn't know, which might be a lot of people who are listening to this or watching this, what is WP Includes?
WP Includes, which you can find at wpincludes.me, is a mentoring initiative that is geared towards pairing women leaders with women who want to be in leadership in WordPress companies. So there's, if anybody saw Siobhan McCune and I talk at WordCamp Europe in Torino, we did a kind of Q&A conversation around the results of a survey that we did to see how many women are in leadership, particularly in the C-suite, in WordPress companies. And the numbers are very low. They are disproportionately low in comparison with C-suites in other tech industries. Mm. We talked a little bit about why that might be. A lot of the early WordPress companies were founded by men. And we see a lot of those leaders are still leading, you know, these large WordPress companies. What it was WordPress now 20 years or 15 years later, just as those companies have grown. And so Siobhan and Francesca Morano started this initiative, and then I kind of managed to scooch in on their coattails, and I'm helping kind of manage. We're just about to go into our third cohort of mentors and mentees, and it's kind of a, we kind of run it over a sort of 3-month period where the mentors and mentees just get together and talk through. So it's almost this coaching element of trying to get more and more women with being able to focus and set their intentions and their direction and be supported in this community of women who want to see more and more women become leaders and be kind of released into some of these areas that they might not feel at this point that they are ready for. So it's just this really great supportive group of women helping women and non-binary or so underrepresented.
Is it one mentor to one mentee that you're working with at a time?
Okay. So it's great. You start to build this relationship, and certainly for me, the relationships have been ongoing after the, you know, the cohort officially ends.
Yeah, I talk a little bit more about that because from what I have heard, the process of, or the act of mentoring or being mentored, it's not a top-down thing. It's really sort of a collaboration, and each person learns from the experience. What has that experience been like for you?
I have loved it. I've probably had more contact or ongoing contact with one of my mentors than the other, which is, just the way that life goes, I would say. I think what people bring to it will certainly inform what they get out of it, and what they contribute and how that conversation goes, I think certainly informs the kind of results that you will get. I think one of my mentees has already shifted gears, has already taking on more leadership within her current role, and is ambitious for more. And so a lot of the conversations have been around, okay, so here's where I'm positioned now. What are the things that I need to adopt and grow into so that I'm ready when opportunities come up? And I can very much see that those opportunities will come up for her. She's amazing. But for me personally, I think, I mean, I think one of the things that I learned when I was in, you know, leading the project managers at Human Made for a while there, or managing the project managers, the actually, like the stuff that sets me on fire is that sense of coaching, of helping people see what they already know and understand mm-hmm. in themselves and releasing that. And then having seeing them kind of be able to fight the imposter really and gain that confidence that, oh, there's nothing actually stopping me from going into greater leadership here. It's my brain or it's my attitude or it's this imposter that's, and being able to just kind of pull back that curtain. And it's all just a case of asking the questions that help them see that it's like, that's so good. So I highly recommend anybody who has the opportunity to sign up when the form goes live for the next cohort. Absolutely get yourselves in there if that's the kind of thing that you're wanting to do. We do a survey of the mentors afterwards, and do you want to do this again? And it's usually a pretty much a resounding yes, because I think the mentors get as much out of it as well, not just because we really want to see this community, you know, see that balance shift in a positive direction, but also because it's such a great experience to see people that you've had input into start to see their value and start to get excited about opportunities and start to take opportunities.
I saw a thing recently, you referencing imposter syndrome made me remember this thing that I saw recently that was talking about how the concept of imposter syndrome originates from something that came during like women's liberation movements and things where like women were starting to get more voice, more power in various circles as because like the dominant male culture was basically like finding reasons for those things to not be true or something. And so it comes out, it has this like quasi scientific medical sort of sounding name, sounds like a problem, but it has these roots in like the feminist movement really, which I thought was really interesting and not something that I had encountered before.
So were they saying that the roots were in pushback against the feminist movement?
Yes. Yeah.
I'm not surprised.
Right, for sure. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's interesting that like women go, oh, I just had this terrible problem with imposter syndrome, without actually going, oh, I really want to use a word that I shouldn't use here, so I'm talking myself out of it. But without going, it's the patriarchy that's mm-hmm. actually put this problem in my head at the moment, and actually going, right. Hang on, let me just see, this is actually a non-problem because this is something that's imposed externally. It's not, you know.
Yes.
And so that you actually have to talk yourself around and away from that sense of that voice in your head, which is that we call the imposter. And it's like, hang on, this is societal expectations that have been placed on me. This is absolutely nothing to do with, you know, I belong here, because, you know, that's what the imposter is saying all the time as well. Or you're not quite ready, or you're not, you know, and it's actually you do and you are.
Yeah.
And lean into that rather than the other.
And I mean, again, like, last I checked, I'm cis white male, but I've also experienced imposter syndrome. But the idea that, like, that experience, like, I don't know that I even would have considered that my experience of imposter syndrome would be distinctly different and, like, separate from your experience of imposter syndrome, just because of, like, what imposter means to me. Based on my privilege and all of the things that go along with what this is different than all of the same things for you.
Yeah. It's such an interesting, there are so many avenues to explore in all of these areas, right? It's like, you know, we've talked about culture and race, and we've talked about gender okay, where are you going? Okay, just don't stand on the keyboard. Thank you very much. It's all, you know, it's the core thread through all of these things is the othering, right? Is the someone that is different from me, I need to protect myself or my position, and so all of these areas where there is privilege, that whichever dynamic we are fighting against or being resisted by, comes down to this: oh, well, I've got something to protect here, and others need to stay away. And it's infuriating, because it's like, if everybody could just see just the value, and that there is enough. I mean, one of the things that I absolutely love about the WordPress community, and it's something I think my first WordCamp was WordCamp Gold Coast in 2011. So what's that, 15 years ago, 14 mm-hmm. years ago. Mm-hmm. And so I heard somebody casually say, isn't it wild that here we all are competitors effectively in an environment, and it doesn't feel like that at all? And I think that is one of the things that has kind of it's one of the threads that's kind of pulled me into this, and why so many of my friends are here, and why I've pulled friends into the WordPress community. And because that sense of there's enough in this community, there's enough. And I think some of the dynamics of the past 12 months have suggested perhaps there isn't. And I'm like, but there is.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's enough. And this whole sense of, you know, well, if I'm trying to protect my corner, and the way that I'm going to do that is by is exclusionary. Mm-hmm. It's disappointing to me.
Yeah. Yeah, when I flipped over to Blue Sky as the place that I go other than the thing, the platform formerly known as Twitter, one of my first, and I still don't know what they're called, so I'm just going to call it a bloot. one of my first bloots was equity does not mean you don't, like, someone else is getting your piece of the pie or a bigger piece of the pie. Equity is saying, hey, there's pie over here. Do you want some?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I wish more people could see that.
Yeah. Yeah, that my brain, I had a thing I was going to say besides that, but now it's completely escaped. But what I will say, I remember we were talking about competitors. You're mentioning that the WordPress community and a room full of competitors, but it doesn't feel that way. One of the first guests that were on this show was Roger, who is chief something or other, head of something or other at Kinsta. And I work at Pantheon, and ostensibly we are competitors. And like, this isn't a Pantheon show or anything, but like, there was a little bit of, I felt trepidation from him, especially since it was like one of the first episodes, just like, is it okay? Like, we invited him, when we were at WordCamp US, we had a video crew at our Pantheon booth, and we were doing these things called web sessions, which are starting to go up on the internet now, where we were interviewing people and basically asking what makes the web work. And I thought, because I had just had a recording with Roger on my podcast, I'm like, he would be a great person. He's here in the room. I can just go over there and grab him and sit him down. And he's like, Is it okay that I have a Kinsta shirt? I'm like, dude, we don't care. Like, we are like, this there's is enough. Not, that's, yeah, there's enough. Like, the people that are interested in Kinsta might not be interested in Pantheon, and the people that are interested in Pantheon might not be interested in Kinsta, and the people that are interested in both might be interested in both, and they want to know what the best thing out of both things is. Like, that's okay.
Yeah. It's interesting because the company that I work for is a craft CMS shop. Mm-hmm. So I left HumanMade and joined them 2.5, nearly 3 years ago. And so that's been an interesting experience, is kind of looking at other communities. It's a very, very different community than WordPress. It's open source, but yet still very much made, owned and operated by Pixel and Tonic, the company behind it. And the, you know, people's attitudes around WordPress is very different sometimes in the craft community. Sure. And you know, the things that make craft are different than the things that make WordPress. And there's been some tension around that for me sometimes, particularly because I am still such an ardent supporter and enthusiast for WordPress. But it's been, I have a client that has worked with us, had gone to WordPress and is coming back to us, not specifically to craft, but I'm actually starting to see more WordPress websites in our portfolio. Mm-hmm. And so I'm quietly loving the fact that that we have, you know, I'm sure my boss is probably not keen that I am publicizing that there's more WordPress in our portfolio, because we are such an ardent craft shop. But it's quite fun to be, for me now, to be able to kind of jump back in to a little bit more WordPress and be back in the back end of WordPress, other than just on my own site, which of course is still, you know, WordPress built but not published too very often at all anymore. Mm. But yeah, it's that's been an interesting dynamic, is actually seeing how other CMSs work. I mean, of course, for a lot of the case, they all do the same thing. But also seeing how other communities work. And yes. And I actually just spent the last 2 days in the Tessitura community. I don't know if you're familiar with Tessitura. It's a software CRM slash ticketing thing for the arts and culture community. So that's been interesting, is seeing how other communities function. And I won't lie, the Tessitura conference, there's a lot of content in there that is not really touching me. I have a client that uses it, and that's why I needed to be there to kind of, and so I was there for some of the tech parts of it. But it was really interesting being in a room full of theatre nerds who are also, and in some cases, tech nerds as well. And yeah, so I think one of the things that I really love is community, actually. Mm-hmm. And I'm not a super extroverted person. I can function very, very well and certainly present with extroversion, but that for the 2 days, I was getting home at the end of the day and I'm like, oh, I'm all peopled out. But yes, what great people. Like, I spent an hour sitting over lunch yesterday talking about musical theatre, which anybody knows me knows that that's something that I absolutely adore. And so yeah, I'm not sure where I was going with that, other than there is that sense of enoughness in other communities, I think, as well.
Yeah, I went to my first DrupalCon this year, and then I went to my first Drupal camp this year as well.
What's the difference?
I'll tell you. DrupalCon is the big event. Right. So there's DrupalCon in Atlanta. The tickets were like $1,000 a head. Yeah. It's the big industry event. Right. And so it's comparable in scale and talk tracks and whatever to the flagship WordCamp, so WordCamp US, right, or EU, yeah, yeah, whatever. And Drupal camps are much, much, much smaller. And those are the local community things. Ones, yeah. So that's more like the your local WordCamp, whatever.
Right.
So I went to Bad Camp, which is Bay Area Drupal Camp, which also has probably the coolest Drupal camp name.
I'm like, that's just one letter away from Bandcamp. I love that.
And I was presenting at Badcamp, actually. And I went to DrupalCon in Atlanta this last year. It's very interesting being the WordPresser in the room full of Drupal people.
Right.
But also, one of the things that jumped out to me immediately when I went to DrupalCon was how much it didn't feel different. Like,
right,
it felt like the, and I've said this before on the show, one of the first things that I saw when I got there was they had a panel thing with a bunch of different stickers, and one of the stickers is on the website, and it says, come for the code, stay for the community.
Yeah.
And that was part of the inception process of how this podcast came to be, was just that idea. And the fact that resonated so strongly to me from a completely different perspective. Like, that is the reason why I have been in the WordPress community for as long as I have been.
Exactly. Yeah, same.
And so seeing that, oh, the Drupal community also has this thing. And then I'll obviously over the course of the week, I got to talk to people and have these conversations. Like it really is like, we're all just people and this is all just software. And at the end of the day, we're doing the same things and more.
Well, the
voices.
Stuff that endures is the people, right?
Yes. Yeah. 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 And the things that we can learn from each other. And I think that's kind of beautiful.
I love that. I think one of the great shames for me that's kind of post COVID is that our local community has really, really struggled. Mm-hmm. Our local WordPress community.
Yeah.
It has really, really struggled. And I was talking to the Tessitura, or the group that I was sitting with at the Tessie conference yesterday, and was talking about, so what are, you know, their community. So I'm sitting here going, oh my goodness, now I need to get back into choir. Like I haven't sung. I came to Australia to sing and I haven't sung really since I moved to Melbourne. It's about 13 years ago. And I I'm sitting there with all these people just buzzing with that energy of, I need to be doing more of this. And, you know, generally sit in a tech conference and go, yeah, I really need to be singing anyway. Apparently Tessitura has a choir, not in Melbourne. Anyway, the long story short is that they're struggling with some of those same things. Yes, they had a Tessitura meetup group that has just struggled. Yeah. I mean, I think Melbourne has struggled. We were under lockdown for so long, and I think that has definitely impacted the psyche of the but also because so many more people are remote, it's harder to get people out of their houses to an event now. Yeah. And I think that's one of our, certainly locally, one of our great challenges as to how do we zhuzh that up. And part of it is also exhausted leaders and not finding any kind of rising leaders who are like, oh, I'll take that on. And,
right.
And let's go for it. So that's one of my hopes, so that someone will rise up in Melbourne and go, yeah, I'm ready. Let's do things. Because I will happily go along, but I don't know how much juice I've got to be organizing meetups again.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, same. Same.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Dee, for coming. And before we go, what where can people find you on the internet?
They can find me at dteel.com. They can find me on thewedprincess.com on Blue Sky. They can find me at wpincludes.me or on the Future of Team podcast that I do with my friend from Canada, James Giroux.
Awesome. Well, again, thank you for joining me on this podcast. go check out Dee's podcast. I definitely want to listen to Dee's podcast as well. And
we talk about a lot of these similar things, workplace, leadership, management. So it's not, there's no code talk because I can't talk code. It's been 15 years since I touched any.
I mean, I figure there's enough code tech podcasts out there that if that's what you're looking for, you can find it.
People. Well, thanks, Chris. It's been absolutely lovely to be here.
Yeah, it's been lovely to have you on. And for everyone else who's watching or listening to this in the future, we'll see you on the internet.